CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com. Gareth Cliff, Bulelo Tinta, and Leanne Moll. Look, here we are.
Look, hola.
And isn't that nice? All right. So it is a Friday. It is the first day of October. It's not a long weekend, but it feels like the proper announcement of spring this weekend. I always think that maybe September's a bit early. I mean, I've got this feeling October's going to be awesome. You know, nothing to base it on. I have no scientific evidence to back me up on this, I'm afraid.
I mean, the fact that we have absolutely solid rain in Gauteng today is a good sign of that. It means it's here.
Yeah, it's a good sign. Listen, you don't have to give me reasons to be excited. Just by the way, in case you were wondering what was happening just now, we did a pre-recorded interview with this guy, Adam Bridle, who's a professional wrestler in the States. I mean, that's a world I know nothing about. I don't watch wrestling, but he seems like such a nice dude. He seems like such a friendly, awesome, happy, positive individual who's doing amazing stuff. So it was good to talk to him. And if you are into that, you could watch it live tomorrow on DSTV's TNT channel. Find out more.
I like
about
that
it.
He's taken on the UK one of the UK's accents, and it's a good one. But he still says South Africa, not South
Africa.
South Africa.
And instead of saying how do you do or hello, he goes how's it, which is very South Africa. Messing around. Listen, we're going to be speaking to a man who I've met once before when he came through to cliffcentral.com years ago, and he's Mr. Sexpo. David Ross is his name. He's the guy who conceived, launched, and basically built this incredible brand around Sexpo, which, you know, in South Africa has been tremendously positive over the last couple of years. It isn't happening like so many things in the expo world are not happening at the moment. But I thought we've got to take the opportunity to speak to him because he's written an autobiography, which is like a tell-all. And I can't wait to hear his stories. He'll be joining us in just a moment or two. And we've also got George Meany joining us a little later on for our little Auto Central feature, which we do on a Friday. But the weekend is here, and if you've got anything cool and exciting happening, you might want to tell us about that. We would love to hear from you. You can drop us a comment. And Leanne, just for those people who don't already know this and everybody who hasn't already done it, the like and subscribe, blah, blah, blah. Please do it quickly.
So welcome back to our channel. Be sure to hit that like button and smash that subscribe button. Don't forget to click on the bell so that you get all notifications of all our new updates.
Oh, that's perfect. Well done. That's so great. Well done. Yeah, you have to put your hand over the camera afterwards, right? That's what counts.
And you have to show things like this with your hand behind them so that you get good focus.
Oh, is that what you do? Do you have to do a white balance with a piece of paper?
Probably.
Yeah. I've been talking to Greg, who reckons that we need to take our VO game up a level. I know Mbulelo's got a whole thing going on with Cliff Central Sport, with the MKT show, where it's filmed in HD. It's got magnificent studio lighting. And if you watched the show yesterday, which I did, there was hilarity with all the guests as well. So you don't want to miss that. That is on Cliff Central Sport. You can subscribe to them on YouTube while you're subscribing to us. All right. So apparently YouTube has blocked all anti-vaccine accounts, all of them. Now, I just want to point out how stupid this is. Not because I want to give any quarter to the anti-vax crowd, but when YouTube does this, it seems to me they have really dodgy standards. I mean, exactly a year ago, when there was all the campaigning around the U.S. presidential election, remember Joe Biden was going up against Donald Trump, and Joe Biden basically didn't appear. He was in his basement. Nobody knew where he was for the longest time. But when he did appear, he was basically an anti-vaxxer, because what he was saying was, I'm not going to take this vaccine if Donald Trump's the president. Kamala Harris said the same thing. Nancy Pelosi said the same thing. So by the standards of right now, they were anti-vaxxers. Now, would you have banned the then president of the United States, Donald Trump, who was trying to get these vaccines out there and whose team was largely responsible for making sure that the vaccines were fast-tracked? Would you ban him? Yeah. Would you ban Joe Biden? Would you ban Nancy Pelosi? Would you ban those people who didn't trust Donald Trump and said they're not going to be vaccinating if he's president, just because.
Well, I mean, this is a no nonsense approach. They are banning huge accounts. They're two massive accounts known globally that'll go. One of them is owned by the Kennedy family.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy Jr. is a bit of an anti-vaxxer. And, you know, this has become like a pejorative term. If you don't trust this vaccine, then suddenly you're an anti-vaxxer. Now, I've said before, I'm pro this thing. I think it's a good idea. I think if it gets us back to normal, I'm all in favor of it. And I don't think it's anybody's business if you or I or anyone else talks about their vaccination status. I don't think it's interesting either. What I don't like is the fact that they're just banning people.
Well, the problem is, are these smaller, more sensationalist accounts. You know, it happened on TikTok was the first time I saw one of these videos where a young woman was filming herself trying to walk around a hospital. She was obviously was dressed up like a patient with a gown on, and she could barely take two steps, and everything was just shaking on her body. And, you know, it was unvoiced, but she had script up there which indicated that this was caused from the vaccine. And it turned out that was a complete ploy. And they're the smaller accounts that are falsely stating that these vaccines are causing autism, that they're causing cancer.
But so what? So you reckon if we ban these people, that people are just going to stop talking about it? You know what's going to happen is that stories like that are going to seem more true because you can't find them to corroborate the evidence because they're going to be banned. There's only one opinion that's going to be okayed by YouTube. Then guess what's going to happen? People are going to look for the alternative opinion in darker, deeper places. And the conspiracy theorists are going to thrive. This is what happens when you ban stuff. I wish these idiots in government and in big tech would just stop trying to treat us like children. People are not dumb. If you give them the maximum amount of information and the complete total gamut, the whole spectrum of opinions, then they'll find out pretty quickly who the smart people are and who the dumb people are. And in between, they'll decide their own position. But if you ban things, guess what happens? It all goes underground. It becomes a whole lot more insidious, a whole lot more dangerous, and that stuff thrives.
Well, they're saying, you know, that the discussion can continue, talk can continue about these possible side effects.
Not on YouTube.
Yes, you can. You can comment on videos and continue the conversation. They won't ban that.
Thanks very much.
They're banning that these accounts that just have outright lies about vaccines that have been proven to be wrong.
And Dr. Fauci at the beginning of the pandemic said, don't wear a mask. Now he's saying, wear a mask. Then he was saying, get the vaccine. After two shots, you're fully vaccinated. Now he's saying, get a booster shot. So as the information changes, does he also become an anti-vaxxer?
No. When information changes in science, you should change. It's actually good that he changes.
Yes,
that's
the
correct way to do it.
But again, who's the arbiter here? Because if you trust him rather than the science...
Yeah, but most people don't know how to read science, Gareth. This idea that people can corroborate information.
You're going to ban people as a safeguard against people spreading false information. That sounds really smart. That's worked so well. That's such a good idea. Like when the Nazis burnt all those books, that really looked great because they could control opinions. Come on. This is 2021. People have phones and people have brains. And if they don't have brains,
I don't know so much.
If they don't apply their brains and they don't use their phone properly, that's on them.
I think it's really harmful. There are people with phones, and the first thing they're going to see when they pick up a phone is somebody who is claiming to have autism after having the vaccine.
And I don't think there's any evidence that giving people good information, they do the right thing with it. Because I'll use the same example I always use. Why is the world getting more obese when we know that that's bad for you if people did what's in their best interest with good information?
No, I agree with
people
you.
Aren't good at taking good information.
You can't ban food for fat people. Do you understand?
That's okay.
You can't you can't lock their fridges. You have a government official or YouTube's senior content director go around to fat people's houses and padlock their fridges. You are not allowed to do that, and neither are big tech. And all they're going to do is create alternative platforms that are outside of their control. What I'm saying to you is not that I agree or disagree about the vaccine or about lockdowns or about coronavirus, any of that stuff. That's pretty much established, and I've told you my position on the vaccines. I'm very pro vaccines. The fact is, when you ban things, and I've always been very consistent about free speech, the moment you ban things, you make it much more sexy and exciting for people to not go along with the mainstream opinion.
When you leave it
for people to decide, they can decide. There's no controversy.
Would you be interested at all in then, if it were a possibility, that if you do happen to, through your feed, watch a video that's falsely anti-vax, or truly anti-vax, but with false accusations and untruths, that be pinned with a link to a video which...
No, because I don't pay no attention to these warnings and these notices that they attach to people's updates. I know that there are lunatics in the world. Do you remember there used to be a newspaper or a tabloid called the National Enquirer? And there used to be these magazines that were just bullshit magazines. And we've got to get to David Ross, so I don't want to carry on about this too much. He's much more interesting than this story. But there's always been stories about Bigfoot and alien abductions and women who've had 17 cats as children and that kind of thing. There's always been bullshit out there. And I don't mind that bullshit thrives. People love a little bit of bullshit. You try to ban it just because it's bullshit.
Well, it's religion, I suppose.
Yeah, of course. So what are you going to do? You're going to ban that too because it's not according to the fact checkers, who, by the way, are not – these are not people you should be trusting. You're going to ban
when you ask them where their research is, they'll say I googled it.
We got to move on. No. We've got a much more important and interesting guest here than this stupid subject, which I know is going on. This is a discussion everyone in the whole world is having at the moment. So carry on in your own time. We've got more important stuff to get to. I'm more interested in this anyway, and I'm sure you will be too. So David Ross is referred to as Mr. Sexpo. He's the guy who conceived of, launched, and brought to South Africa the amazing international entertainment exhibition called Sexpo. It's a health, sexuality, and lifestyle expo. It started in Australia in 1996.
It was the winning sperm cell that started this.
Right. And it came to South Africa all the way back in 2007. It's gone to London. After the sale of Sexpo, with no ongoing involvement in the event, and with the exhibition industry in disarray due to COVID-19, David decided he's going to tell his story. He's going to write a tell-all autobiography. And he's with us this morning. How are you, Mr. Ross? Nice to see you.
G'day, Gareth and others. And is that's the Australian way of saying, how's it, South Africa?
How are you?
Nice to see you.
G'day.
First of all, I think that there are many South Africans who want to thank you for bringing Sexpo to our shores. We tend to have a reputation as a country of being very conservative and kind of a bit boring and, you know, not particularly au fait with the or comfortable with talking about sex. And I think Sexpo has gone a long way to making South Africa a much more open and much more sexually healthy place. So first of all, thank you on behalf of all of South Africa. But how does it feel, man, after 38 years in the adult entertainment industry? How does it feel to write down all your stories?
Well, I tell you what, it's there's a song called Glory Days by Bruce Springsteen.
Yep.
And it sort of bring memories of that to me, because it seems like all I'm doing is sitting around thinking about past glory days. I'm still writing, we're really just we're in the final throes, but we're looking for a publishing deal at the moment. So that's the next challenge.
Well, let's go into the glory days for a minute. Tell us how it all got started before Sexpo, what your story was.
Ooh, okay. And just, I would like to add too about the South Africans, and thank you to all the South Africans, because I've always been made to feel very welcome over there. Love the place. And I'm double vax, so as soon as we can travel again, I'll be over there to talk a bit more about the book. Hopefully, when we've got a publishing deal and we're ready to actually get it out to the public. Mm-hmm. So the starting point was I used to be a motor mechanic many years ago. And that was I thought I had a dream job because I was working on cars and I've always been a car person, remain that to this day. And I had a car accident on Christmas Day in 1980, which has almost killed me, in fact. And I spent 3 months in hospital the first time and then many hospital trips after that. And I got an insurance payout. Now, I put some of that insurance payout to work and bought into what was an illegal brothel at the time.
Oh, wow.
But I'd done my research and there was a moratorium in place that dictated that that brothels were to become legal should they get a planning permit. And the planning permit stipulated they had to be within certain distance from residential areas and various other criteria. And so I did my research and came to the conclusion that the brothel was going to get a permit. So I invested a substantial amount of money in purchasing the building. Or part of the building, I should say. I had a share, didn't buy that shirt out.
Right.
And so sure enough, after a lot of legwork, and I went and introduced myself to the neighbours and put on a suit, and we got the permit. So that was great. Very tedious work. Not a lot for a man to do in that industry. So I was actually doing the cleaning at the place for quite some time because I felt I needed to have some input. So a couple of years later, I sold out of that and I'd met numerous people in the adult industry by that stage. Because it's a very, very incestuous business. My working title of the book is Life Inside the Adult Industry Bubble. Mm-hmm. And because everyone you know is in the adult industry. You have lunch with people from the adult industry. You have dinner with people from the adult industry. You socialize with people from the adult industry. And this is why I say life can be a bit boring, not necessarily boring, but a bit of a shock when one leaves the industry.
It's true also that you guys have different hours to everyone else. I mean, the adult entertainment industry is mostly a nocturnal business. And you know, the rest of us are doing 9 to 5s. And then our fun starts at night. For you guys, that was work time.
Well, I mean, since 1995, 1996, when I started running Sexpo, it did become a day job, an office job. But of course, then we had the 4 days of putting the show on at various towns, cities, and then internationally. So it became a 9 to 5 plus job after that. Not too different, but still the people that in your office are all in the adult industry. And look, I mean, I do feel you mentioned too about South Africa and I think Australia for sure, being more open to discussion about sex these days. And I do feel a great deal of pride in that. However, one thing that hasn't definitely changed is that people that work in the industry suffer enormous discrimination at the hands of banks and financial institutions and landlords and all the things one needs to run a business or, in fact, just to live. Because you mentioned you work in the adult industry and it is, it's like, oh no. So that hasn't changed and I am doing a bit of work on that, but that's probably a story for another time.
Well, when Bulelo and Leanne started in the sex industry, they also had these problems and they obviously couldn't buy property. I mean, listen, it's difficult. It's difficult, but there are also advantages to it. I mean, you get to meet pretty amazing people. You get to do really interesting things. Certainly the experiences that many people have, whether they're actually actively involved in the sex industry or whether or not they just run it from a business point of view, which is kind of what you were doing. I mean, it must be quite exciting because people are animals, and when you see them engaging in the stuff that animals do and that animals aren't embarrassed about, but humans are, you kind of have to laugh when you step back and look at it. And I'm sure for you, there must be loads of stuff that you think is really funny. I mean, give us some ideas because you're obviously going through the book writing process and doing that means you unpack a whole lot of your own memories. There must have been some hilarious stories of things that happened, either at Sexpo or with Sexpo, or even during the time when you were running this illegal brothel, when you were doing other stuff in the entertainment industry that is hilarious and kind of ridiculous now. When you think about it, it makes you smile at very least.
Well, there's certainly been some ridiculous moments, but also some fairly dangerous moments. I mean, when we were running the illegal brothel, when it became legal, we were firebombed by a competitor. At Brisbane Sexpo in 2001, we had a bomb threat where we were. It was one time suggested that we evacuate the show, and so we had a meeting with all the security and the bomb people and the venue, and it was decided not to evacuate. And so when the designated time came around, the bomb was supposed to go off. I decided that I needed to stay in the show because we also decided in this board meeting that we weren't going to tell any of the staff or any of the public or anything, just carry on regardless and happy days. So I thought, well, I really should stay in the building because if a bomb does go off and I'm over the road having lunch with a glass of champagne in my hand or something, it probably wouldn't look too good.
So this is
when the appointed time came around, it was like, whew, okay.
This is a story because we don't think of the adult entertainment industry as being a competitive space when we are just consumers. You know, for example, if we come along to Sexpo, we don't think, oh, well, there are other people who don't like David and his Sexpo, and they've got their own thing that they're doing, and they want to firebomb him. I mean, it can get quite hairy because you deal with some underworld people, right?
Oh, look, in the early days, even more recently, but yes, in the early days, well, I mean, we were, and I have to jump on board that, we were criminals by definition because we were running an illegal business, as everyone else was. So, water finds its own level, if you like. And there were some interesting meetings in the early days. But even, you know, at a Melbourne event in Australia, mid 2000 maybe, an outlaw motorcycle gang president came up to me who I knew, was a colleague. He ran a strip joint, and he came up to me at the bar at the close of show drinks, and took me aside and said, "Look, this bloke, one of your exhibitors, owes me money, and I need to get it. And if don't get it, then he's going to end up in the Yarra with the Yarra River without his legs." I had to go and take this friend who was an exhibitor and remains a close friend, and I had to take him aside and say, "Look, name redacted, says that you owe him money, and he really, really wants it, and he really, really wants it tonight." And so I mentioned to him the possible ramifications of not paying this outlaw motorcycle gang president, and. I left it at that because I thought, well, look, I really don't want to get involved in this. I've got a show to run. And the next day I saw my friend, at the show, and he was working his stand. And I thought, oh, no, sorry, I didn't see him the next day, and I was a bit concerned. And then later in the day I saw him and I said, how'd that all work out? And he goes, mate, we've just been fishing. Huh? I said, what, with name redacted outlaw motorcycle gang president? He goes, yeah. And I said, he told you were going to end up in the Yarra without your legs, and you've gone out fishing on a boat with him. Clearly the money was paid. It all ended up well. But the industry does tend to attract a colourful type of array. But look, there's mums and dads involved too that are just there purely for the money. And I remember... years ago, a group of grandmothers then, so God bless them, they've probably passed away by now, but this is in the early days, and they started a company called Bum Floss, which was selling lingerie and G-strings and so forth, and they used to hand-stitch these. And they'd go on a show, and they were in their 70s then, and they'd put their stand up, and they'd be standing, be selling their Bum Floss stuff, and then they'd go away to their grandkids and their, you know, whatever they did afterwards, and that was it.
I wonder how many brands have launched on the back of Sexpo, especially, you know, like you talk about lingerie brands, underwear brands, Whether it's kind of strip shows, famous porn stars have been helped by this in their careers. I mean, to me, you're like the grandfather of a lot of this stuff globally now, in some way that you didn't know it was going to be this big when you started it. I'm curious about those people who resisted. I mean, we know here in South Africa, the religious lobby didn't particularly love Sexpo. There were those concerned parents groups who always come out of the woodwork and say, oh, well, you know, even though we're not going, even though we won't allow our kids to go, you shouldn't be allowed to do this for the people who do want to go, because we're in charge of morality in this country. There must have been a lot of resistance in the beginning.
Look, absolutely. The story that sticks to my mind, and it's really where the business was made, was in 1995, where I conceived the idea and then went about putting the show together. And obviously with the show, I mean, the first idea was to have a two-day touch and feel expo where people could invite the public in to come and touch.
Touch and feel.
That was the working title. Yeah. And so anyway, I went about finding a venue, and well, that proved considerably more difficult than I had ever imagined. I mean, I'd suffered discrimination because I'd been in the industry, but I thought, you know, this is a respectable business. We're starting here. It'll be fine. Well, I couldn't get a venue for the love of it. So we ended up in a very small hotel, conference area, with about 30 stands. And so it was a raging success from what we thought. You know, we had 5,000 odd people turn up over 4 days, which, you know, we really don't know exactly, but it's somewhere around there. And then, so the Monday morning, I sat down with the manager of the hotel and said, now, about next year. And he said, oh, no, I'm afraid there'll be no next year. You know, we've got a lot of religious groups that use our hotel for their conference and so forth, and we've had numerous phone calls that we won't be getting their business if we allow you back again. So that was the end of that year. I then went on to the Melbourne Exhibition Centre because we knew that we could attract a crowd, and I got knocked back from the Melbourne Exhibition Centre. Well, no, sorry. In the first case, I got the okay from the Melbourne Exhibition Centre, and then when I told them the name of the event, all of a sudden the dates became unavailable. And the reason was given that we had an accountant seminar at the same time. So I promptly put out a media release saying clearly accountants really don't have sex and they're not much fun. And so started the lobbying process. So I lobbied the MEC for a good 6 months, and it culminated with me turning up outside a boardroom meeting that they were having, unannounced, with a dozen packs that I'd made up of a video, and it was video back in those days, that we'd edited of the footage that we'd taken at the first show, the small one, and with a glossy brochure and all the right words and so forth, and presented that. So we ended up getting the go-ahead, and when we had our first show at the Melbourne Exhibition Centre, we did 38,900 odd people in 4 days. We had a queue the length of the Melbourne Exhibition Centre, which is 2 kilometres. Anyway, so the general manager came up to me of the Melbourne Exhibition Centre, and he said, David, I'm so glad that we ended up, you know, almost taking credit for having taken the booking. And he said, you really won me when I saw my neighbour in the queue. So that brings it down to a personal level, where that's really the point that people, and this goes to the discrimination I was talking about before, where people say, look, you know, we love to use your services and we love to attend, but don't think about being our next door neighbor or borrowing money from us, or, you know, or
leasing property from us. You know,
it's ongoing.
People just love judging other people. But the irony of all that judgment is that, I mean, I used to go to Sexpo because, I obviously was, you know, we were a media partner. And I mean, we went with Leanne once or twice, and I took the whole team there, and we used to walk around and we'd see so many people that we knew. And once you see other people there who you know, you're like, well, actually, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed about here. Exactly. And it takes a kind of mental shift. Because, you know, you've got people scantily clad walking around, or they're selling sex toys, or they're where else can you do that kind of thing in society and not have people look at you askance? Because when everybody's at Sexpo, there's no room for you to be judgy. You got to get on with it.
Well, we used to like to say that we encouraged an environment where people could leave their inhibitions at the door. And I think, a lot of that was to do with creating the environment, the right space, non-threatening. I mean, making people laugh was another thing. Several times, hung several hundred blow-up dolls and sheep various things from the roof. Now, I'll tell you a quick story. I don't know how much time we've got, but when I came up with this idea, I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang all these sheep from the thing. Blow-up dolls, and they make joke ones, blow-up sheep.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I better be, so I've got black ones, white ones, sheep, this thing. And so I thought, well, okay, we can fill them full of helium and let them go. Well, a bottle of helium and I got a blow-up doll in my office. Now, we work in an office, which was, we've got accounts payable department, accounts receivable, IT department. Yeah, it's an office. People come in, bankers come in for meetings. And so I blew up this doll in my office to see if it would float. And if so, how long would it stay blown up for? Now, I can tell you that the helium that goes inside a blow-up doll is not sufficient to make it float. The plastic.
Oh, really?
Okay. So then I thought, okay, well, there goes that idea. We're gonna have to string them from the roof. Mm. But I did leave this blow-up doll in my office visitor's chair for several days because I needed to know how long it would stay blown up for.
Yeah.
And so the people that came into my office for a meeting, and some from outside of our office, but anyone came. What are you doing with a blower?
It's like when you say to them when they leave, please close the door behind you.
so we end up hanging these with fishing line from the roof, which took us a full 24 hours on the night before the show, and I was there physically doing it with some people myself, and so because it was a great idea until we realised how long it was actually going to take. But some of the dolls were looking a bit deflated by that. We had to blow them up with compressed air. Some were looking a bit deflated by the end of the show. But the point being that we tried to make an environment where people felt comfortable coming into, leave their inhibitions at the door. And if you could make them laugh and make them laugh early, that would be a good thing. So people walked in and it was so funny to sit there where all the people would flock in and see people walking and they look around and they're a bit nervous for a start. And then they look up and see dolls hanging from the roof. And then that's it. Yeah, you've got them.
I remember that the funniest thing of all is you'd kind of see these very ordinary middle-class couples who you think probably don't even have a sex life, and they're walking into the sex toy shop and they're buying bags and bags and bags of stuff. And you think, Jesus, those people are kinky when they walk past you,
Everyone does it.
Right. You don't know this stuff until you see it with your own eyes. So I've got Bulelo on the screen here, and he's got the painting that Picasso did of me, which we were talking about a little bit earlier on. You kind of launched him. I mean, how else does a guy like that get in a pre-internet age? How does he get famous? And you helped him become a household name worldwide.
That was an interesting story. I write that he sent a tape in, but I think he actually rang originally, and I said to him, I spoke to him personally, and I said, send a tape in and we'll see how we go. And I didn't really think, if someone rings you up cold and says, look, I paint with my penis, and I think I'd be a really good talent for you. It's like, send us a tape and we'll see how we go. And not really expecting very much of that. So he sent this tape in, and I remember my PA sitting in the adjoining office, my outside office, and I said, I was watching it on the screen, and I didn't even bother picking up the phone, the intercom. I just yelled out, get this bloke! And now, you're right, he travels all over the world. He was in hospital the other day. I saw on Facebook he had a bad reaction to some Novocaine not in his social life, that was, at the dentist he has. Had some bad reaction to some Novocaine. So he spent a few days in hospital with a head like a elephant man. But I think he's all better now. So as long as it didn't swell his paintbrush, we're probably right.
So I'm curious about, with your experience of so many countries and Sexpo going all over the world, and what do you, how would you describe the attitude to sex, because you're in a unique position. You've heard all the complaints, you've heard all the compliments, you've seen where it's been tremendously successful and where it's maybe been less successful. How would you rank Australians, South Africans, the British, and perhaps even other people all over the world when it comes to their attitudes to sex?
Look, I think, and I'm not saying this just because I'm on South African, I know this is going around the world thanks to the internet, but look, I've had this debate, not debate, I've had the discussion with journalists in South Africa asking, well, you know, we're really conservative people over here. And I think nothing could be further than the truth. What I say is that the media may try and tell a population that they're conservative, but that doesn't make it so. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that South Africans are probably the most open to the subject matter that I've come into contact with, and I say that in all seriousness. I mean, Australia's really good. Australia's really good. UK, they're a bit standoffish. I mean, we all know the joke about the politicians in the stockings and high heels, male ones, that is. they might be a bit kinky, but they don't like coming out in public, I don't think. But of course, the 2015 show in the UK was a disaster for another. Another thing, I was there for that show, and the Paris bombings happened on the Wednesday or something before the show.
Yeah.
And that closed London down. The subway was closed. The underground. There were sniffer dogs on the street. We had sniffer dogs on the floor. Drug sniffer dogs. Bomb sniffer dogs, I should say. No one turned up, but it was a disaster that the local organizer couldn't recover from.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point too, because I mean, if terrorists are going to strike, Sexpo, ironically, would probably be high up on their list because some of them are religious extremists. So you probably had to be careful.
Well, when I mentioned the 2001, I think it was bomb threat in Brisbane, and this is I can tell you, this is the first time that I've aired this publicly. This bomb threat, and it will come as a bit of a shock to some of the staff that were there. But as I said before, I did stay in the venue. Yes, we were led to believe that it was a religious fundamentalist group that was behind that. I don't know if they're, you know, religiously fundamental as we'd like to refer to them now, but fundamental by definition, I would say, because if they thought that having a sex show was something they couldn't deal with, well, I'd say they're pretty fundamental. But back to your point or your question, look, South Africa is really, the numbers were fantastic in South Africa. Hopefully when the pandemic is under control and international travel is allowed again, I really want to get over there. If it's not for a revival of some show similar to Sexpo, then certainly my public speaking.
I'll tell you what, David, we need something similar to Sexpo again, because I think people have become quite boring since you left and since Sexpo moved on. And I think it's time to revive these things. There's a huge market for it. And South Africans, as you say, I'm willing to believe you. It's kind of surprising to me. South Africans have a good attitude to sex. I think we can do with some improvements as well. So I got a question here, or rather a comment. This is from Tracy. She says, Leanne, please introduce David with your sex voice. Leanne used to do those. You remember those call things where, if you call this number now, we'll turn you.
Oh, I got a story for you on that.
But Leanne, do it quickly for him, and then he can tell us the story.
So it would be something like, Sexpo, this weekend, come and play with us. Well, and there goes the blush.
That's very good. And I can tell you, I've heard plenty of phone sex line operators over the years. Not in a personal capacity, mind you.
Yeah.
But when I first, as I mentioned earlier, I was doing public relations and marketing for the adult industry after I sold out of the brothel. And then I got a call I ended up doing a 12-month gig with Club X, which is a national chain of adult bookstores in Australia, or retail adult stores. And so they showed me my new office when I got there, and straight across the hall was the phone sex operator room. Now, I kid you not, I'd be on the phone trying to make you to a journalist, trying to, you know, sell a story on how clean and wholesome we were.
Yeah.
And there'd be a girl, I've just got to shut my door, you know. So,
God.
We were in a fairly cramped office back in those days.
All right, so there are lots of things that I think people still want to know, but you are going to put the book out, and we hopefully will see you come and visit soon as travel opens up. I do think that Sexpo's made a tremendous contribution to South Africa, and for that reason, I'm not being sarcastic at all when I say that we've benefited from your child, your brainchild.
Thank you.
in Sexpo. But it isn't always, and I don't want you to give out too much here because we've kind of got to wrap up anyway. But yeah, you know, people always imagine that behind the scenes and backstage and in the preparation for a show like that, that's where the really, really crazy stuff happens. But it's probably quite businesslike, right?
Well, look, we enjoyed ourselves.
okay, all right.
However, look, we had production managers backstage. We had we had lighting managers. We had stage managers. And they all had to get forms signed by people when they're coming in before they went on stage. So it was businesslike in that regard, but not every minute of the day.
And it wasn't boring either. But I'm just saying that a lot of people think.
Moment.
Yeah, of course. There we go. And that's probably a good title for the book if you haven't got one already. Never a Dull Moment. Now,
can I just add, and I know you've got to wrap up, but just in regard to the book launch and so forth, the public speaking angle of this is hilarious. I've been doing a bit in Australia, and I really hope to, when I come to South Africa, to do some corporate speaking, because the story goes to the resilience and the dedication and the drive needed to make this happen, given all of the hiccups roadblocks that we were placed in front of us early on. And so not only is it a story of how to public relations, marketing and messaging and packaging is such so important, but it's delivered in such a humorous way that it's a presentation that no one will forget. So MrSexpo.com with a hyphen in the middle of it, they can go there. And if anyone wants a copy of the book, MrSexpo.com.
MrSexpo.com. Well, we're talking to Mr.
It's got a hyphen in it, so it's Mr-Sexpo.com.
So I'm thrilled to speak to you again, David. And let us know when you're out here, and we'll definitely get together and can tell us more of your great stories. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for the interesting questions.
No, it's great to see you. There's David Ross, Mr. Sexpo on cliffcentral.com this morning. And as usual on a Friday, that's our favorite time of the week, and it's our favorite point in the week. We get to do all the fun stuff, and this morning George Meany will join us in just a second or two. It's been a busy start to the day. I hope you've got a good start to your October. Leanne, you got quite flustered there with Mr. Sexpo, huh?
Did you?
Oh, yes. Come and enjoy yourself with us. How did you say it?
Sexpo this weekend. Come and play with us. I just want to know what all those sex phone people look like, because that's the funny part.
I don't think you do, actually, because that'll totally spoil the fun.
Yeah, it's like I've never wanted to know what the Cell C voice lady was like. I was always like, in my mind, she's just Candice Hillbrandt, you know, or whatever. Like that.
Oh, you're still on that, huh, Mbulelo?
Yeah, Candice Hillbrandt. Yeah, she's
you like
a huge part of my teenage years.
All right. That's quite enough from you. Otherwise, you'll be writing a Sexpo book soon. All right, everybody, it is time for us to get to George Meany. Just quickly before we get to George, you know, we always recommend a podcast of the week. And this week it is Life with Lebang. She managed to catch up with hip hop heavyweight, AKA, and newcomer Costa Titch. They've unpacked the state of music in South Africa. They talked about wrestling as well. They talked about the power of good lyrics and their new album, You're Welcome. Plus, there's even a cool video of it too, which you can watch on our website or on the Cliff Central YouTube channel, which you need to get to ASAP. That's Life with Lebang. You can catch the show every Thursday live on cliffcentral.com at 11 a.m., or you can get the podcasts wherever you listen. So just in case you needed a recommendation for some extra entertainment over the weekend, Life with Lebang. Hey, George Meany, how the hell are you?
I'm hell of a fine, thank you, Gareth.
That's good. That's good stuff, George. We need you to be hella fine. Otherwise, we're not going to start our weekend right. Okay, exactly. So George, what's going on? What's news?
Hello, it's Rianne.
George.
God, you too.
Before I get into is that a caricature behind Bolelo?
No, that is the painting that Picasso painted of me with his penis.
Oh, wow.
That's sex, but it's one of my greatest treasures. That's why I keep it in the storeroom at Cliff Central.
Okay. Wow. In the storeroom.
George, you don't seem to take me seriously when I say that it's my greatest treasure. I don't believe you, George.
I do believe you. Absolutely do believe you.
You know those blue marks on that painting that make up the background? You see that? Those are his ass cheeks. Those blue marks.
Those are his ass. I watched him do this.
Yeah, Leanne actually watched. She got a close-up view of him doing this. He did it in studio and presented with a bow afterwards. He presented it when a royal portrait is made, and then they move the little curtain aside, and the queen goes, "Yeah, very nice." That's kind of how I felt. They presented this portrait to me.
Right. Very, very nice. Nonetheless, moving on from Picasso to taxi companies.
You asked, George. I was going to create a nice gap between you and Mr. Sexpo so it wasn't awkward and uncomfortable, but you brought up the painting, so now, you know.
I did, because it's there on the screen next to Mbolelo.
I'm a professional. I was creating the right aesthetic. We're on YouTube now.
That's right. Damn straight. All right.
Anyway, a taxi company in Bangkok, yes. Thailand, almost went out of business during lockdown. And this move that they made, you might think that it's for profit, but it wasn't. So what they did was they had a fleet of taxis that owed money on these taxis, and the taxi company was struggling to make ends meet, pay its employees. So it took the fleet of taxis and created gardens on top of the roofs of the taxis. Now, you can imagine in a parking lot, a bunch of taxis standing side by side and all gridlocked. And they turned the roofs of these taxis into gardens to grow vegetables, chili peppers, and then they put tires on the top of these taxi roofs, filled them with water so that frogs could start to grow.
This is amazing. Is this called the Greta Thunberg taxi rank now? Because I believe... Is that true? That's what I heard.
I don't know what the name of the new name of the taxi rank is, but Greta Thunberg. I'll check it out, Gareth. But they did this in order to feed their employees. They said they were going to try and sell the leftovers, but they did it to feed their employees and to keep everybody afloat. And then they grew frogs, which I think in Thailand they actually eat frogs.
So it was a frog farming, plant growing taxi rank. I mean, I could see South Africa with our taxi ranks. We could create a whole biosphere in this country if we could do something like this. But if we could do something like this, those are the key words. And I somehow don't see the taxi buses in South Africa being particularly environmentally attuned. Or do you think I'm being sarcastic and cynical, Leanne Bolelo? What do you think? You think there's a chance that the taxi buses
I'm just imagining our already tall taxis with tall millie stalks and getting crushed underneath bridges.
I don't see it working.
All right. I don't know if it works in South Africa. I don't, taxis have operated here non-stop. Remember in Thailand and that area, the taxis are very reliant on tourism, whereas in South Africa it's commuting. So I don't think in South Africa our taxis would ever stop.
Just I mentioned Greta Thunberg because I do want to show you the cover of Scandinavian Vogue, where she features on the cover with a horse in a forest, and it says at the bottom, "The wonders of Greta Thunberg," which I think is just so marvelous. Isn't that lovely? That's hero worship.
A lot of paper used to make those magazines.
Yeah, but Leanne, don't spoil everybody's fantasy.
The wonders of a 15-year-old.
They must stop trotting out this poor girl and using her as a prop for their causes.
She was out and about just yesterday at some conference. And the UK Prime Minister was there, and she was saying to him how they've ruined children's lives.
Yeah, never before have we seen a child's life ruined quite as much as we've seen it happen with Greta Thunberg. You've never seen such a miserable, unhappy human being who should be enjoying her childhood. And all she is complaining about the environment the whole time and moaning about how we're ruining it. What a sad...
She has a purpose.
Her parents should be arrested for child abuse, but that's
come on.
Yes, I'm telling you. Back to you, George. Let's go on to the important stuff.
Well, talking about strange people from Florida... a man tried to trade a car into a dealership, sat down, wanted to buy a new car, had his current car, and the dealership put the VIN number into their system. And it turned out that that man stole that car from that very dealership the week before.
Oh, wow. George, I meant to ask you, because I've heard stories about this. You know, sometimes people sell cars that they don't actually own. So I'm sure that you guys have security protocols in place with Auto Trader, but there are dodgy people, like in any business, who probably try to sell cars that they actually don't own, that are either stolen or that haven't transferred properly from one person to another, that, you know, the right forms haven't been filled in. There must be a bit of that that goes on, especially in a country like this, right?
There's a lot of, I mean, I would say, I wouldn't say the majority, but there's a lot of unscrupulous dealings going on where, you know, you have to be careful, but the majority of dealers, the ones on Auto Trader anyway, do check out where the car comes from, and they have mechanisms and processes where they, when they buy the car, they check that the car isn't stolen. Because I mean, you can imagine, even if you bought a car and you paid money for it and it's a stolen car, the police will come and fetch it and they couldn't care what you paid for it. They'll impound it.
Exactly. And then you lose all your money that you've paid over to the other person.
Exactly. So you got to be careful. But a reputable dealer would have checked the car out before they bought it, which means that it's okay to buy it from them. I think you'll get a gut instinct. What I always advise or encourage people to do is if you're going to buy a car from a dealership, go and look at what their reputation looks like online. Because that's going to give you an indication of whether this is a reputable dealer or not. And if they've built a good reputation on social media and they're engaging with their customers, chances are they're not going to be dodgy. Whereas if they're non-existent online, I mean, how can somebody be non-existent online in the 21st century or 22nd century? I think it's just if there's a void there, there's question marks in my mind.
And George, is there like an SABS type of bureau where we can go and check out accredited people like yourself? Or is it just at the moment, we just got to do our own research? You know what I mean? Where I can go and see that, like Auto Trader are an accredited place. Is there a list where I can look at 50 accredited people or not?
Yes. So there are industry bodies in the automotive industry in South Africa. And there's a few of them. Franchise dealers belong to the National Automobile Dealers Association, and so do independent dealers, as well as NAMSA, the National Association for Automobile Manufacturers of South Africa. So there are industry bodies that you can go and see whether the dealer is a member of those. But being a member of those, you can imagine you can be a member and then become dodgy or do something dodgy, and that organization's never going to know that you've become dodgy. So you've got to do your own research as well.
Listen, I can't believe it's taken us how many episodes of having you on the show before we eventually got to the point where we brought this up, because it's quite a big deal. And you've just shared quite a lot of really useful information with people that they may not have considered before.
Well, exactly. You buying a car, it's a big, big, big outlay. And if you buy a stolen car, you're going to lose the money because the police are just going to take it from you.
Damn right. What else have you got for us?
Finally, Gareth, and this is happening in South Africa, maybe not to the degree that it's happening in the UK, but Auto Trader UK has reported that inquiries for electric cars have gone up to 1.8 times. Every 1.8 minutes, there's a search for an electric car over the last weekend. And it's it's up 36% from the weekend before. And that is as a result of the fuel shortage in the UK.
Oh, yes. That fuel shortage is such a big deal. Apparently, Boris Johnson was on the phone to the Queen and she answered and said, "Yes, I drove a truck during the war. Why do you ask?" Because they've got such shortages that they're looking for lorry drivers to help deliver fuel to the various fuel stations. So it's a real problem, huh?
It's a real, real problem. And as a result, consumers have responded. And you know, we saw this at lockdown in South Africa at the beginning of last year, where consumer behavior and shopping behavior changes almost instantaneously. That's why, you know, if you run a business and you don't have your fingers on data, with the ability to see what your customers are doing, you can't make changes 3 months down the line. Literally, these things happen overnight. And we saw it at the beginning of lockdown last year. And literally one weekend to the next, when this fuel shortage started to happen, what did consumer search do? Switch to electric cars.
Amazing. That's the kind of catalyst that you need to make people change their behavior. You're not going to do it with propaganda and persuasion.
Exactly. Data.
Well, George, as always, fascinating to have you on, and thank you for being on the show today. And Bulelo, Leanne, we will see you on Monday. Otherwise, everybody have a good weekend. Thank you for joining us today. Make sure that you listen to our podcast of the week, Life with Lebang, and we will catch you Monday morning, 6 a.m. bright and early. Have a happy weekend, baby. Check you later. Be good. CliffCentral.com.